Thank you for that, Alison, and I hope people do, if you haven't been here before, you know, do appreciate it and do use the room in the future. So I'm just going to introduce tonight's meeting, if I can get me things to work properly, which they don't. I'm going to use my voice, obviously, but the microphones are there for those people who do wish to use the microphones. So tonight's meeting is on the theme, it's a national touring meeting called Trump, Imperialism and the Middle East. And we have a range of speakers to discuss those issues. And I've just got where, here we are. So I'll just introduce it first by saying that Stop the War Coalition, who are organising this tour, and Newcastle Stop the War Coalition are organising this meeting here tonight. Stop the War, for those people who don't know, was formed in September 2001 in the weeks following the 9/11 attacks when George Bush announced the war on terror. Stop the War has since been dedicated to campaigning against the ending of the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Ukraine and elsewhere. Stop the War opposes the British establishment's disastrous addiction to war and its squandering of public resources on militarism. We've initiated many campaigns around these issues, and we are committed to supporting the Palestinian rights, opposing racism and Islamophobia, and to the defence of civil liberties. Since October 2023, we have been part of the National Palestine Coalition of six pro-Palestinian organisations organising regular national marches in London and local actions in towns and cities around the country to demand an end to the genocide in Gaza and an end to the UK arms sales to Israel and a free Palestine. And despite attempts by ministers and the police, our demonstrations have seen well over a million people on the streets opposing British government's complicity in genocide. We have, of course, also opposed Russia's invasion of Ukraine, NATO's ongoing proxy war, and Israel's interventions in Lebanon, Iran, and Syria. And meanwhile, Trump is in the White House manipulating everything this way, then that way, but always in the interests of the US, as Keir Starmer jumps to his tune. So, Stop the War has organised this national speaking tour to discuss Trump, imperialism in the Middle East and to try to join the geopolitical dots. So we're really pleased to have been able to organise this meeting in this wonderful venue, the Common Room. We have two speakers from the national tour, and Holocaust survivor Stephen Kapos and Stop the War Deputy President Andrew Murray, and three local speakers representing different strands of the struggles in the fight against the challenges of imperialism. So we'll get started now. And the ongoing genocide in Gaza and the dreadful suffering we're seeing daily on the starving and the horror of those being murdered by Israel in the search for food will, I'm sure, be very much in everybody's mind this evening right now. So I'm very pleased to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Nadine Abzi. Dr. Abzi is a Palestinian doctor and works in South Tyneside and Southern NHS Trust. I was privileged to share a platform with her shortly after the 7th of October in the wintry, icy winter of Newcastle, a rally in Newcastle. And then I had heard a wonderful presentation from her at the NACPA 77 commemoration in Newcastle, organised a Palestinian forum in Britain earlier this year. So she's not necessarily going to talk just about Palestine, so there are wider issues, but please give a very warm welcome to Dr.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'll try without. Can people hear me, or is that fine? I think it works in a way that the voice echoes. But thank you so much for all the work you do. And we're very proud of all the protests and everyone joining them and all the mobilisation since the beginning of the war. The war is devastating and it's sad, and you lose hope when you know, look at the things that have happened. But when we see people acting against it and saying, coming out and saying this is not acceptable, it just it reminds you of humanity, of that humans, there are bad, evil people, but there are also many, many more good people. It reminds you, gives you that glimpse of hope and towards a better future, towards a place where, you know, children, we don't watch them televised on TV dying. I think I should like to begin this speech with saying, in the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. And just with a story that I had encountered that just relates to the topic of the tour, and then maybe a bit more about Palestine. But the other day someone asked me, why are women in Afghanistan not allowed to be educated? And I replied, do you know anyone from Afghanistan? No. Have you talked to any Afghan woman? No. And I just found it very interesting. It made me think of the way we kind of approach things and the way people think about things. Why are we concerned about the education of the women of Afghanistan or the women of Iraq when we don't actually know their reality, we don't actually know how many of them are accessing education or whether they are or not. We're not looking into the deeper roots of why they lacked access to education in the first place. When we don't think about their lives, we don't think about the 4.5 million, and correct me if my numbers are wrong, of people that were killed in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan, when there was a war on terror, and when the thing that led them to do that war is because they were counter, trying to get the terrorists out. But within that, 4.5 million people died. I feel like it's double standards, and it's also a deep-rooted Islamophobia where, Muslim suffering is only acknowledged when it fits with the westernized narratives that justify intervention. I think it also shows you the imperialist mindset that tends to pretend to hold a higher moral ground often, while refusing to confront its own crimes. Occupations, war, colonialism, mass displacement, all while preaching women education and women rights. I think the same person who asked me this question has probably no concern over the women in Gaza, and I wasn't asked about that, who are starved, amputated, orphaned, imprisoned, and killed. And I was traveling that day back from London, and the train driver, after a few disruptions, announced quite a few times within that journey that unfortunately, because of these disruptions, and the first time he announced this, he told everyone to focus and listen to what he had to say, and if anyone was sleeping, to nudge them to get their attention to what he was about to say. So I thought it was something very concerning. I thought it was, we have to change trains, another disruption or something. But the thing that he wanted to tell us is that there will be no catering service on that train. And it made me go into this deep thinking of what an interesting world we live in, where, 3 hours of not having any food on the train, while a lot of people might have had their meals already, or they're having their meals after, or they have food with them on the train, which usually people get snacks, right? And caused so much, worry among the train staff and the driver, the people on board, and it caused the driver to apologize very sincerely quite a few times. Every time we stop at the station, the announcement comes back again and he apologizes for the lack of catering. And it just made me think of what starvation means as well. Starvation is a 10-letter word that probably doesn't convey what it means to starve. What it means to die of starvation, that slow, agonizing death. And I'm just going to tell you guys what happens when we are hungry. And probably people have fasted for a few hours or spent maybe a day without eating. So the first thing that happens is that you start burning you start burning the fat and sugar stores that you have in your body. So you become hungry, you become weak, you become irritable, and you become fatigued, so you don't have any more energy to do your day-to-day activities. Then you begin to waste away, so you begin to lose a lot of weight. Your immune system collapses because it doesn't have any reserves to fight back, it doesn't have any energy to fight back, so you become very prone to infections quite easily. And then your organs, one by one, they start shutting down. And I would just like you all to imagine an adult going through that, albeit a child, dying slowly, fading away in front of their parents, because children are much, much more susceptible to dying of starvation. They have much less reserves, and their body cannot fight things as adults do. I just imagine their parents watching them fade away and unable to provide any food for them. I imagine how one of the Palestinian fathers just recently said that for the first time he's actually glad and happy that his two daughters have passed away, because he didn't have to watch them starve to death and feel very unable to provide for them. The thing about starvation, it's not affecting a certain population within Gaza, it's affecting all people, including health professionals, journalists, who are unable that day on Al Jazeera. The presenter was saying that the journalist was unable to come and present and talk about what's going on because he was completely fatigued, he didn't have any food. Hospital staff used to get one meal a day just to be able go on with their shifts. Now that's been cut off, they don't have anything. And I can't imagine a shift where I have to go to work without having a meal. Like, it completely, you can't think right? You can't think straight. Maybe fasting for a few hours, as we do, like, for example, in Ramadan when we fast, that's fine. But I can't imagine fasting quite a few days without any energy to, stand up in theatre and suture people up with even, like, the least means they already have. So imagine putting starvation on top of that, not just for the doctors, but for the patients as well. And if you know anything about starvation, you would know that providing food right now for the people who have been are nearly at the brink of death is actually not useful. There is something called a refeeding syndrome, so you can't just give them food. It'll have to be done within hospitals, and it has to be done in a certain way where you don't shock their system with all the nutrients that it desperately needs, or else they go into a much faster death in other ways. And I don't think they have the capacity to that. The irony to all of this is that this child who is dying, just miles away across, there is enough food to feed the whole of the strip for 3 months, and they're not allowing it to go in. And then, who are the people who are imprisoned? Who are the people that are stopped? It's the people who are against this, rather than the people who are doing it. And I just find that very saddening, and very telling of what societies we have become. Gaza has been now facing two relentless years of genocide, of pure evil. It has broken the things that Israel have done, has broken every record of war crimes. Most orphaned children, most amputee children. Every most you can think of that is evil, they've broken that record. It's blockaded by air, sea and land, suffocated in every way possible by the occupation. An evil not witnessed in modern history. It has been paralyzed, 2 years of just unfathomable abuse. But what I would say to us all is that let us not be cowards, let us not sit in silence watching these atrocities unfold, and sometimes too scared to talk about Palestine because it might make someone uncomfortable. Uncomfortable to hear that a child was being burnt alive. And every time we access food, water, or healthcare even, we should remember to ask ourselves, what can we do? We need to honour the memory of those who have gone and honour the people that are standing there trying to fight for their lives. We need to mobilise, vote, join movements, write to your MPs and donate, and support direct actions, boycott works, divestion works. We've seen the impact of the BDS movement. We've seen the impact of millions being divested from Israeli companies. And of course, the arms factory that we still have functioning in Newcastle, with many other arms factories across the country that have been protested against. Finally, I would just like to say, as the people of as we are reminded by the people of Gaza when times become turbulent and turmoil arises, and they showcase their strength through their iman, they say, Hasbunallah wa ni'mal wakeel. Allah is truly sufficient for us, and He is the best disposer of affairs. They have hope in us and in themselves that things will get better. And sometimes, even talking to my relatives there, they are the ones that give me hope when I am completely shattered and unable to think about how I can help, what I can do. They tell me and remind me that there is always hope, and that they are content with the decree of God, and that they will remain strong, and they are sure that this is their land, they're not going anywhere, and they will get it back. Thank you.
Thank you. talking about the starvation, I think, is something that's crossed my mind in